Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So, what'd you do this weekend? Did you catch up on sleep? Do the laundry or other errands and chores? Did you manage to see friends and spend time with your family? With only 2 days off from work a week, it can be impossible to get everything done, and more often than not, we have to abandon some plans and promises just to make the most urgent things fit. Well, now imagine you had one extra day off per week. What else could you do? Would you feel more rested, less resentful? Would you be able to work on a passion project or take the kids on a trip? The concept of a three-day weekend has been floating around the American business consciousness for some time, but has never really taken hold. People worry about lost wages, lost productivity, and fewer dollars in the economy overall. Well, now at least there's some data to support that the opposite might be true. Did you hear about this? Iceland just released results of a four-year study of more than 2,500 employees in different fields whose work weeks were reduced by 1 day and found an increased sense of well-being among workers with no loss of productivity. In fact, in some places, workers were more productive after cutting back their hours. So what would it take to try it here? And has the pandemic and all that working from home nudged us further in one direction or another? With me now to talk about this is a writer who has made a name for herself talking about work burnout and has written explicitly recently about the idea of the four-day week. It's Anne Helen Peterson, culture writer and co-author of a forthcoming book called Out of Office, The Big Problem and Bigger Promise of Working from Home. Hi, Anne. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, I'm so glad to be here.
And let's start by stating the obvious, which is that not everyone works full time. Not everyone works 5 days a week. Some people work part time or freelance or work more than 5 days a week. Do you have a sense of how approximately how many Americans work the stereotypical 40-hour or 5-day work week?
You know, I think it's really, really hard to gauge because, you know, there's a lot of people who are wage workers, right, who do clock in and clock out, but then might also be working second jobs or be working side hustles that are more difficult to quantify. And people who are salaried, who maybe ostensibly work a 40-hour week, anyone who worked from home during the pandemic will tell you that they worked far more than 40 hours a week. And there's also just a lot of slippage these days in terms of how when work is expected to be completed in after hours times. So I think that any data that, like, you know, the Department of Labor Services has, like, it's still not necessarily a great accounting for how much work we're doing. And then also just thinking about, you know, if we say I work 40 hours a week, how much of those 40 hours are you actually working? And how much, especially for people who do knowledge work or work on computers, like, how much are you just kind of fiddling around on your computer and how much you're actually working?
Yeah. And you wrote that there's nothing natural about the length of our work week. It has been and should continue to be malleable to the needs and health of workers, which is to say to the needs and health of society at large. That's a quote from you. So maybe people who haven't thought about this might like to hear you talk a little bit of the origin of the weekend as we know it.
Yeah, so this is the work of labor advocates over the course of the 19th century, the mid-20th century. There was this push with the expansion of electricity to really expand the workday to any time that, you know, people could be in factories, right, could have illumination that would allow them to do work. And then over the course of the 1800s and 1900s, various guilds and labor organizations really pushed back against that to form what we now know as the five-day work week. And I think, you know, and another significant moment in that was Henry Ford allowing all of his workers a 5-day work week, which was the sort of like seismic shift that also opened it up to lots of other different types of workers. But the point is too, even before that, before electricity, lots of work was seasonal. There was different types of jobs that you just couldn't do for different seasons, right? Because it demanded that you be outside or that you have longer hours of illumination. Like, work has expanded and contracted, and the great promise of automation that we are going through right now, right? Computers can do so much more work for us, is that we should be able to work less, right? Not we should be working the same as we ever have before.
So listeners, you can get in on this. How would your life be different if you could take an extra day off a week, even if you work more hours per day for the 4 days to make it possible? But as you hear, our guest Ann Helen Peterson is also talking about just working fewer hours. 646-435-7280. What would you be able to get done in 3 days off that is impossible in two? And we also want to hear from bosses, from managers. Could you make a 4 day week work in your office or business? What would the challenges be? And what worries you about the concept if you are worried listening to this? 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. From any of those perspectives or others, as we continue with Ann Helen Peterson, culture writer and co-author of the forthcoming book, Out of Office, The Big Problem and Bigger Promise of Working from Home, 646-435-7280, or tweet at Brian Lehrer. Okay, so this new study comes out of Iceland. How did this experiment come to be, and what did it really reveal?
So this Iceland experiment is really, really interesting because the other experiments that have happened over the course of the last 5-10 years have really been limited to people, just individual corporations, right? And the fact that they're performed at individual corporations allows other corporations to be like, well, that worked for them, but it would never work for us. And so the difference with what happened with Iceland is they looked at similar countries, right? Other Nordic countries that have similar safety nets, similar ideas about, parental leave, all these different things, but saw that in Iceland, people were working much longer hours and were much more miserable at work, just looking at general survey questions about fatigue and feeling like they have time for friends or family, that sort of thing. And so they thought, okay, if we have the same productivity level, the same GDP, like why are our people working so much more? What if we tried encouraging them through a reduced work week to do better work, more concentrated work when they're at work, and then create more space for leisure and time for rest in the rest of their week? And they started small with mayor's office, like other federal agencies. The first organization that they partnered with was actually a group that works with their form of foster care and child protective services, because those professions, as in the United States, are professions with incredibly high rates of burnout and stress. So they wanted to figure out how can we decrease some of that burnout and stress by actually decreasing the number of hours these people work. And it slowly expanded over the course of the next few years, and also importantly expanded to people not just doing office work, but also people doing construction, people doing maintenance, people working front desks. And each organization within the study had to really figure out, okay, how are we going to make this work for us? Because it really is different, profession by profession, job by job, office by office, how you can reduce hours but still have the same levels of service. And the results are they're very clear. Productivity is up, happiness is up, absenteeism is down. Basically, people are better workers when they are working less. But the services, the quality of service remains the same.
Let's take a phone call from, I think, somebody who's doing this. Cindy in Williamsburg, you're on WNYC. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to call in. I'm one of the co-owners of Beacon's Closet, which is a buy-sell trade business that's been in Brooklyn and in Manhattan for about 24 years. We've implemented the 4-day work week for about 23 years, a full-time week at our store is between 32 and 36 hours. Retail, it's a high volume retail. People get really burned out dealing with the public. When you're stressed out, you're not nice to people. So it can be, for us, it's just always work. We've been able to pay a living wage. We provide health insurance for our employees, 100% paid. It's work for us, and it's a kinder way to run a business. It's more human. And I just wanted to say that it works.
That's really great. What trade-offs did you make in order to enable this? In other words, did you hire more people because they were each working fewer hours than at other stores, but you weren't able to pay each one as much as if they were working 40-hour weeks or any other trade-offs?
I think what we did is we just have a large staff, and we do have a young staff. Some of the, there's a lot of part-time people, but our management tends to stay with us from anywhere from 4 to 10 years. And I don't know that there is really a trade-off. I think that we do have a large part-time staff, but the people that work full-time, like I said, just don't work usually around 36 hours. And the thing is, too, it's a retail day, so we're open like 11 to 8. Mm-hmm. So the day, your 4 days might be longer hours than the standard like 9-to-5 job, but you still get that day off. So right. I just think it makes people happier.
Cindy, thank you very much. Let's take another caller. Susan in Long Beach, you're on WNYC. Hi, Susan.
Hi, so nice to talk to you. Yes, my father had a factory in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s where they made custom-made upholstery, draperies. So everyone was working in a factory, a lot of seamstresses. And the women approached my dad at one point and said, would you be willing to do a 4-day week? Because we can't get all our chores done, our errands. Back in those days, in the 60s and 70s, stores weren't necessarily open on Sundays. So he thought about it and he said, sure, let's try it. And it became the standard for his business. Everybody was happier. They got into a groove of work. So instead of leaving the factory at 4, they were still humming along till 6. Mm-hmm. And then they had a 3-day weekend and they got a lot done and everybody was happy.
So in that model, it is roughly the 40-hour week. It's just 4 longer
yes.
days rather than 5 shorter ones, correct?
Yes. Yes. And it gave them, I think 3 days off really gave these people a sense of, when I'm at home, I'm really at home. I'm really taking care of business at home. I'm spending time with my family. And I'm getting everything done. You can't, you really can't, anyone that runs a home knows, you can't get it all done on a Saturday yeah. or a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
The shop, I mean, the stores are packed. You know, you have to go to the bank, the supermarket, the post office. All of these things, you have to do the laundry, clean the house, make all the food. It's just not possible.
And that was back when we actually made furniture in the United States. Now they make it all in Indonesia or somewhere.
Susan, Queens, New York.
Queens, New York. I've heard of it. Susan, thank you very much. So, Ann Helen Peterson, I think we heard two different models from those two callers. And I'm not sure if what you write includes the one we just heard from Susan, whose father ran a furniture factory in Queens. It's still a 40-hour week. It's not working less. It's just working longer 4 days.
Yeah, the 4-10s, that's what it's sometimes called, is you work 4 days for 10 hours, is a different model in so much as I think a lot of places, like, you know, that hasn't been a difficult argument to make. Lots of different government offices have done this, in part because if you close down the office and you don't have to pay for air conditioning on Friday, then it's actually cheaper in the long run in a lot of ways. But I do think if you talk to people who work those 4-10s, it's really exhausting. Like a 10-hour work day, especially doing anything that requires interacting with the public or really attentive work, like you are wiped after that day. And I think, you know, some companies might have to try that model to get to a different model. But I think a lot, you don't see as much rejuvenation as you do with the actual reduced, 32 hour model.
I thought it was really interesting, too, that the caller, Susan, said it was the women at the factory who pushed for the 4-day week, and she didn't mention childcare explicitly or any family responsibilities, but we know how this tends to fall in the division of labor. I'm curious if you had any reaction or would put that in cultural context at all, hearing that anecdote.
Oh, yeah. So there are two arguments that you can make about the 4-day week, and one really is directed at people who are concerned about profits. right? And that's where you make all of these arguments about productivity and attrition, and you'll have less turnover, et cetera, et cetera. And then you make the argument to the worker and you say, you know, as this previous caller was saying, right now, for a lot of people, half of their weekend is just totally filled up with trying to manage everything from the week that got pushed to the weekend. And then maybe they have a slight moment of relaxation, depending on their lives, on Sunday. The 3-day week allows you to have more time to attend to, you know, the errands of life, but it also gives you a chance. And this is what they've actually seen in companies that have tried these pilot programs. It gives people a chance to make the sort of commitments that they would otherwise not be able to make in terms of volunteering, being at their kids' schools. People who are grandparents, they can very easily be like, I will take the afternoon on Friday to take care of the kids, or I will always do pickup on Friday from school. You know, it gives those childcare opportunities that aren't always possible. So especially, you know, it doesn't have to be Friday or it doesn't have to be Monday. Some companies make it so that in order to make this work, people take the day throughout the week. Mm-hmm. So let's say you have a family and both parents work for companies that have this 4-day week. One of the parents takes the day on Tuesday, the other day takes it on Thursday, or the other parent takes it on Thursday. There are 2 days of childcare that are covered.
Now, the success of the trial, this experiment in Iceland, from what I've read, has led to widespread adoption of a 4-day week across that country. When the study was published earlier this month, 86% of Iceland's working population either had a reduced work week or the right to one. So, you know, a study comes out in this country and they talk about it in the media for a couple of days, but it doesn't change the power structure. Did this actually happen that way?
Well, it happened through the power of unions. And I think that's a really important thing to underline, is that unions and other advocates, but primarily unions and guilds in Iceland, were the ones who started pushing for the pilot programs. And then once the data was there, they said, okay, you know, this is something that we want to advocate for moving forward. And I think you could see various unions start to push for this in the United States as well. And in industries that aren't unionized, that's where you're going to see it, I think, a little bit more coming from CEOs and from employees. And there are companies that are really eager to do this.
Yeah. And You write that you were struck by the word that the authors of the report from Iceland used to describe participant shift in work-life balance. They felt they were achieving something close to harmony. But already in Iceland and in Scandinavia, these international surveys of happiness always tend to come out a lot higher in places like that than in this country. So I'm just curious what struck you about the word harmony in this context.
Well, I think harmony is just a much better word than work-life balance, because I think now that phrase has really been hollowed out. When a company starts talking about the importance of work-life balance, it's usually because they're inviting you to have none of it in order to distinguish yourself. And so I think something like harmony tries to get at this idea that you are a better person at work, right? And that makes you a better person in your non-work life, and vice versa. They have really a symbiotic effect on one another. And I think right now we do have a symbiotic effect, but it's an unharmonic, a dissonant effect, in that the amount that we work makes us worse people in our non-work lives. Right?
One more call. Gail in Central Jersey, you're on WNYC. Hi, Gail.
Hi. I come from the point of view of healthcare. And, you know, healthcare in New Jersey covers a third of our working population. But healthcare in many cases are 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we, you know, spend years without realizing what a weekend is, so because our weekends are sometimes during the middle of the week. Plus, what do you do when the workload doesn't go down and someone has to be physically present to do it if you can't do
yes.
it?
Yes, Gail, thank you so much. And briefly, Anne, because we're going to run out of time shortly, does this apply beyond sort of what you called at the beginning knowledge workers?
Yeah, for sure. And, I, you know, in Iceland and in other countries that make this work, they have people working those shifts, right? It's not about not having people work 9 to 5. It's about staggering those shifts, but then people still have a less than 40-hour work week, and they are more attentive medical professionals because of it.
Right. And in our last minute, does the pandemic affect the conversation in this country on this already? Does it actually affect it, or is it just media chatter?
Well, I do think that people are reconsidering the placement of work in their lives and also priorities in their lives. And the other thing is that I think that it's an employee market right now when it comes to hiring. Employees have some power, both in retail jobs and also in knowledge jobs that they have not had before. So this is one way to make yourself an attractive employer.
And they have more power. Why? I mean, we just had like 20% unemployment in this country a year ago because of the pandemic. How did the employees, and we just really literally have 15 seconds for this answer, but how did employees wind up with more power?
Well, they had the ability to say no. And part of that was unemployment insurance. And part of that is people who were knowledge workers and had accumulated some form of savings can now say, well, I want to work for a different sort of company. Mm-hmm. I want to have a different approach to work.
Ann Helen Peterson, her forthcoming book, Out of Office, The Big Problem and Bigger Promise of Working from Home. Thank you so much.
Thank you.